Here with one of my very, very good friends, Alex London. And the reason why we're doing this in such a way is because I just had a panic attack and asked Alex over text message, can I talk through this with you? And, I think that there are other people that I've been able to talk to about stuff, but Alex has come into my life. And we just have, we're on the same page, we're on the same level on certain things. And I just feel like she understands where I'm coming from and has actually dealt with this. So, Alex, introduce yourself. Who are you? What are you doing in this world? Tell my listeners, and then we're gonna talk some shit.
Oh, I love talking the shit, man. So I'm Alex London, and I've listened to Brooke's podcast for a little while now.
That's how we met, because you were a fangirl.
I invited her for a date, and I paid for her food.
That's
So
right.
that's how I reined her in,
That's right.
man. A fancy Olive Garden soup and salad
You
date.
know what? Olive Garden's the shit. Maybe they'll sponsor this episode.
Maybe they'll give us free
We should go there
breadsticks.
now. Like, that's how I feel. Like, I want to eat breadsticks right now. Shit.
I ate it today. I'm not gonna lie.
Oh, you suck.
I'm a traitor.
So you're also gonna hear the dog in the background. There's nothing I can do about it. Sorry. She's in heat. So.
It's part of the panic, though. So
Yeah.
it's
Oh
okay.
my
It's
God,
authentic.
exactly.
It's authentic.
So when they talk about, when you hear about these things like the dogs, pick up on it's so true. And that's why dogs have to go through service training and all of that so that they can learn how to calm down because they instinctively pick up on that energy. But I think what I got from that first like lunch with you is that that the thing I was just saying, which was we're on the same level, like we understand each other, and that's rare in the mental illness world. We don't need to get into diagnoses and medications and all of that stuff. I will say that because I just had a panic attack, I had to take a milligram of Xanax, and I've talked about this on other episodes, not in depth, because you guys know that that's kind of my trigger is talking about other people's medications. So I don't want to do that to you, but the way I feel about benzodiazepines is that it is literally meant for this exact thing. And the guy that I just got out of a relationship with, when I first met him, was taking like four a day and drinking and all of that. And I know that people can get really addicted to it. And then it makes it difficult for those of us who have the prescription for it. It's almost like it delegitimizes. Or however that works. But like it is literally the only thing that will bring somebody down from a true panic attack is something strong enough like a benzo, like a Xanax or a Valium or a clonazepam, whatever it's called. So I feel like that is something that you should really explore if you are having these true panic attacks. So, Alex, how comfortable are you talking about like when you have a panic attack? What does it look like? What is it something that you deal with a certain way? How do you come down from it?
So I think probably like my first true like panic attack. And another thing we really wanted to kind of clarify and talk about is we're talking about panic attacks, not
Yep.
anxiety attacks.
Right.
And this for both of us is like a physical symptom
Right.
as well. Like the physical symptoms come in tow with the emotional, but like the racing heart, the sweaty palms is something that like I honestly felt probably for the first time, I think like 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And I, as soon as it happened, could not comprehend really what was happening because I'd heard about it from friends or things like that. And
Right.
I was not an advocate for myself, nor was I an advocate in the world really, and knowledgeable about anything until like last year, 2 years ago.
Right.
So for me, having that happen was a shocking instance.
Yeah, it's scary. And it's scary.
Like I thought I was having a heart attack.
Yeah.
And when I talked to my doctor about it later on, I was prescribed like the lowest level Xanax.
Right.
Possible. It happened for me in like a series of months kind of thing. Yeah. Like I had one or two in a month and I took half of like the lowest dose of Xanax and it knocked me out to the point where I just would sleep.
And essentially that is the way you want your body to come down from, you know, this racing heart. I mean, it's not good for you. So you do want to come down to the point of, okay, I just need, you know, close your eyes. But it's almost an exhaustion thing too, yeah, where it brings you down. It's not just the Xanax. It's that your body is like, it was like running a marathon and then you like collapse and you're mm-hmm. tired. Yeah. Otherwise you're going to just burn.
And it's just this just exhaustion. And that's like exactly what is one of my favorite things that another kind of mental health advocate that I know have said is people don't understand like the amount of exhaustion or the more energy it takes to run in like a normal level for people with mental illness because it's so occupying. And I feel that not enough people know that having one of these attacks is physically and mentally exhausting and a problem for people. Yeah. Like it is something that affects them like having an illness, like having a cold. It's just it's physically exhausting because your body is having a fight or flight instance where it is choosing to fight against something.
Exactly. And that's it's a fear. Like,
yeah.
Like like we were just saying, so I want to like go to this situation that we kind of had this like, you know, epiphany realization together because I just had this panic attack about like, you know, what am I going to do? If you listen to the last episode, I'm in this situation where I have to get somebody out of the house. And then I'm like, well, how am I going to afford this month? And so all of the things, right? All of the things are going through my head and I can't breathe. For me, like my throat closes up. It's like a asthma attack almost. And to the point of, and then I'm like, get lightheaded. And so I texted her and said, like, is this a trigger for you? Can I talk through this? And I, you know, called her. And then the thing that I realized was that you gave me these like bullet points. Like you let me say some stuff and then you're like, okay, this is what we're going to do. And this is what we're going to do. And I'll tell you one thing. I've never had anybody say like, this is what we're going to do. I mean, maybe I have, but it struck me today, like we're in this together, that if someone's having a real panic attack, you don't necessarily want to be like, oh, everything's going to be okay. And, or tell me about it. You kind of want to give them like action points or like, you know, say like, this is what we're going to do, or this is how I'm going to help you. That to me was so helpful to be like, oh my God, someone's going to fucking help me. Like, I'm not asking anyone to lend me money. I need like someone to help me because there's no one else. But there's also this idea of like, it's situational. It's person to person, right? Like if this may not be the thing that would help like you, or this may not be the thing that would help somebody else in a panic attack, but being very aware of like what's happening to this person that's reaching out for help, that's having this like physical, you know, reaction, my cortisol levels get so high that like you can see the adrenaline come up through my neck. It used to be that I'd see the doctor and have these tests done and then they thought it was adrenal fatigue to the point of sending me to an endocrinologist. Like this mental illness shit manifests in physical ways like you have no idea. Like you just have no idea. When people say like, oh, I'm having an anxiety attack, there's a difference between anxiety and panic. And there's like literally on the, what is it, the DSM or whatever mm-hmm. it's called, there's anxiety disorder and panic disorder, which I feel like I have both. But panic disorder doesn't really come into effect until there's something like right in front of your face. My therapist, I was telling Alex this earlier, my therapist said on Tuesday when I saw her that panic disorder is like when you're in the woods and the bear jumps out and is like just about to attack you. That's panic. That's your adrenaline rush, the fight or flight, all of it. Anxiety is like the, hey, I might be going camping in 2 weeks and there's a possibility that there would be a bear attack. And that causes you anxiety over those few weeks. And that's something like, you know, you can calm down or whatever. But this is what we're talking about is this panic disorder, the thing that you can't yoga your way out of and you can't exercise your way out of. You know, you can't pray your way out of it, but you can be there for somebody.
And I think like knowing that in, you don't even have to experience them yourself, but having that right. empathy and realizing that this is a real life physical thing for somebody,
yeah,
and not like a, oh, I'm really nervous, which happens, right. And that's not, I'm not like belittling that at all, because right. I also have those issues where I get really nervous, or like,
yeah,
I get anxious about something and I'm looking forward to it coming up, or I'm nervous about it coming up. This is something that it's like, it's happening here right and then. Now,
yep.
And I'm feeling that thing here and now,
yep.
And I've found that in my dealings and like when I'm dealing with it, somebody like saying, oh, it's totally okay. Or, you know, it'll like rubbing my back and being like, you know, yeah. it'll get better.
Yeah. Don't touch anyone like in a like, panic attack.
It's not, that is not helpful for me to say like, it'll get better. Like, how is it going to get better for me
yeah.
right now? I mean, I well, understand. Well,
that's what I was saying. Like okay, you yeah. told me how. That's what helped. Yeah. Like, tell me how.
Yeah.
Or suggest. Yeah. How is it going to get better?
And like ask the, like if you don't know how to help somebody, ask them.
Yeah.
Like, how can I help you right now?
Right.
Is the point.
Yeah.
Like, don't just leave them hanging.
Exactly.
Don't like, if somebody is asking for that help or you notice that's having, they're having a problem.
Right.
Ask them or talk right. to them.
Right.
Honestly, if I were to be having something happen or if somebody like broke their leg in the middle of the street, you wouldn't just leave them
right
there.
Right.
You wouldn't.
No.
If somebody is having these symptoms and having this issue,
right.
ask them. Like, they're going to tell you, the best way to help me is to leave me alone right now.
Yeah.
The best way to exactly. help me is to help me figure out this issue.
Right.
Like, the best way to help me is just to sit and shut up.
Right. And the thing like that reminds me is this last episode I talked about being a fixer in relationships. And so it is difficult when you are a fixer, when somebody is, you know, having a panic attack or, you know, something's happening in the moment and you just want to fix it, you still need to ask, like, how can I help? Or say, you know, in the future, please reach out and let me know what I can do. But certainly check yourself as the fixer. Check yourself, because I've been in that situation, especially since like, oh, I know what a panic attack is. If somebody is like in that, I want to fix it, but I also know what we're saying right now. So I make sure that I'm asking them, what do you need? But before you say anything, you need to make sure that you are getting from them what they need.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's helpful in that our relationship, like I've seen you before, or like not seen you, but I've heard you
yeah.
in a panic attack before. And
right.
so in that I kind of knew, okay, so she needs to be talked through. Like
yeah.
these are the steps that are going to happen that are going to make it better.
Yeah.
Because not only were you dealing with like real life physical symptoms, but it was triggered by these things that we need to figure out. And like
yeah.
we have a larger plan that we need to, like, okay, think through these steps that
yeah.
are going to make it better. And dealing with the emotional, like, thoughts of things will help calm down the physical thoughts of it.
Right.
Help. Not like solve.
Right.
Because you can totally, like, if I'm having a problem because my wall is painted red and you paint my wall white, like, I might as well still be having a heart attack.
Right. Like, exactly.
But it's going to help.
Right.
And it's going to help me notice, like, okay, the wall's white again. It's fine.
Right.
Like, I'll be better soon and my body will get better
exactly.
sooner. But leaving them in that constant, like, fight or flight, like, constant, like, lights flashing situation
yeah.
is not going to help
no.
them physically.
No. that's exactly what this whole situation. I mean, you can even see me right now. I'm twitchy, and this is the thing. Like, about, I even did a little video the other day after leaving the gym that, like, you know, you can't exercise your way out of these things. I had to stop because my heart was racing too much, you know, at the gym. It wasn't a full-blown panic attack. It just was, you know, some symptoms. But again, it's physical. But, like, you know, I talk about living successfully with all of this. This is how I live successfully with it, because I know what to do. I know who to reach out to. Or I figure it out. Or, you know, any of these things. And I'm open about it. And, like, you know, this whole idea of being vulnerable, you know, I've said this before. I think it was Brené Brown that said vulnerability is not vulnerability, you know, without disclosure. No, that's not what she said. See, now I can't think. But I think my point is, like, I've had lithium, I've had Xanax, I've had my other medication, and I'm still, like, jumpy and twitchy. And this is what happens, and you have to be aware of it. And when it happens, you know, even if you have to go to the hospital, they are prepared for that. They're prepared. You want to make sure you do that before you pass out. We were talking about that. There were times long, long time ago when I didn't have this type of medication and this kind of awareness, is that I would get in these situations and I would end up in the closet shaking and, like, sitting on the floor back and forth, almost like being autistic. And you were saying something like,
it's just the sensory overload. That's, yeah, the physical aspect of things. Like, I can sometimes tell physically, like, my heart starts to race faster, right, and I get, like, kind of clammy. Like, I almost feel like I have a cold, but not quite. And so in those instances, I start to notice, and I think that's just from experience.
Yeah.
And having had this kind of disease for so long,
yeah,
that I start to pick up on it so that it doesn't get full blown. But I still, to this day, like, I get full blown panic attacks, and I will go sit in my shower for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, yes, just because it's, like, quiet, and I know, like, the water feeling,
yes,
is helpful. Or I'll have to put on, like, my noise canceling headphones.
Yeah.
Because I feel everything, because, yeah, I'm in fight or flight. It's like you, right, said before, that shock aspect of things, that you're like, okay, I don't know how to move forward from this right now. There's, right, a wall in front of me.
Right.
I need to knock down the wall, but I can't. I don't, right, have tools to do that right now.
Exactly. Exactly. This is what we're trying to do with all of this awareness and advocacy and all of the things, right? Alex is part of the National Alliance for Mental Illness. And, you know, there's so many groups and movements out there that want to bring awareness. But this type of thing, I want for people to understand, is the real deal. This is, like, raw, balls to the wall. Like, I literally just had a fucking panic attack, you know, still in this mode. You know, I'm stuck. Like, I literally have so much work to do, but I'm so stuck. And when we talk about breaking down, to not be able to deal with these panic attacks would then result in a breakdown. It would result in me going to the hospital. And that, I think, is the most, like, important thing of when I talk about living successfully with mental illness, is that I'm so self-aware that I was able to call and say, I need this. I need you to help me. If you're too prideful, or, you know, I have this whole thing I want to talk about with men right now, which I won't get into, but, you know, men are so much less likely to reach out and ask for help. So I feel like we're the lucky ones where we can say this, like, out loud and say, this is what's working for us. I mean, obviously this is very uncomfortable. I am extremely uncomfortable. I my heart's racing. I don't like this feeling. I really, like, I'm hungry, but I'm not hungry. You know, I'm a little embarrassed. I'm, you know, all of the things. I just want it to go away. But if we say our shit and we just, like, talk it out, and again, like, give those points to somebody, like, this is how we're going to work it out. Even just a little thing, like, okay, I've got to rent this house out. And, like, it's so such a mess. It's so dirty. And so it's daunting, the kind of stuff that has to get done before I can rent it out. And I just asked my friend Alex if she would help me clean. And what did you say?
I freaking love cleaning. Like, I'm so pumped to, like, organize the shit out of this house. Like, oh my God, and let's do it now.
Let's do it right now. Okay, that'll be fine. And that's, like, you have to reach out and just ask. Like, we were saying, I was talking about the situation that I might have to, like, pay for the next month all by myself or, you know, get the stuff out from the person who's supposed to be moving out. And she made the comment, like, you know, I'll get my husband and our friend and we'll get there in trucks. And I remembered the fact that, and I don't know if some of you are listening that were a part of this, but when I got divorced and had to move out of that house, there was like 50 people that showed up. So the idea that like remind the person that's in the panic attack, remind them of the things that like, you know, for sure, like she knew for sure that she could help and that her husband could help and that their friend could help. She knew that for sure. So, like, say those things.
Yeah. And, like, the aspect of just, like, talking about it and being that person that's vulnerable or being that person that says, like, yeah, I deal with this has opened us both up, I think.
Yeah.
And successfully living with something is not treating it perfectly every day.
Right.
It's not living without this.
Right. It's like it's, managing it
is it. Not a cured thing.
Right.
And I don't expect to be 100% well all the time.
Right.
Nor do I think that's a reality for people to get to. I mean, sure, you're going to be better and you're going to get happier. Right. You're going to be able to get through those like moments and days that are dark and those moments that you're physically ill. Right. But like getting beyond and living past that like stigma within yourself even is where you beat what you're dealing with, because this mental breakdown and this mental like wall that we all have to jump over and hurdle, which I feel like we go through and we get through different times. Like you're diagnosed, you're okay, whatever. Even if you're not diagnosed, you're like, I have some really bad crap going on and I'm like, I'm struggling right now. The first wall is getting over that and saying you have that.
Right.
And there's just constant like walls and hurdles in your way and learning to be like that hurdle jumper. Like,
yeah.
And being that successful person and like showing somebody else how to jump over it is where you get your success and is where you get your triumphs.
Yeah.
And like feeling that and feeling somebody else getting over something because you helped them is like my strongest treatment that I work with and is like, those endorphins that I absolutely critically rely on.
Yeah.
I can't live without that. And one of the things that I'm always really nervous about is like, what happens if I reach like a potential? Like what happens if I reach success with this?
Right.
And say like, I'm talking about this and I'm talking about it with other people. Like they're looking to me for this.
Right.
And that vulnerability state. And like, I just remember that my courage and my vulnerability in this is my biggest hurdle.
Yeah.
And so jumping over that and being in that on the other side of that is my cure and my treatment and like my best success.
Yep.
And so helping like Brooke in this moment being like, hey, call, like it's not a big deal for me to talk somebody through. Like it's not a big deal for me to do and to treat that because I have been treated and I know like I can call her and she will no nonsense talk me out of it.
Yeah.
Like, and having those kinds of relationships for the things that you need is critical.
Yeah, it is. And like, you got to have those relationships, like, you know, the relationship with my best friend, and I know you're listening, Mel, because you're my biggest fan, but like that relationship is a certain way because when I've had these panic attacks and called someone like her or, you know, someone who's not ever dealt with it, I then feel bad and it like makes it worse. It's not them. It's not that they're making me feel worse. It's that like they've never dealt with this before. Mm-hmm. They're not a therapist. They're not like, I'm putting this on them. And then now I feel bad that they're feel bad for me and they love me and it just goes round and round. So that's, I guess the other part of it too, is know who you can go to. Or warn the person, like warn them, hey, I have this, you know, situation and I may need to call you. Are you comfortable with that? I kind of always ask, like, is this going to be a trigger for somebody? Because I had a friend like a while ago that I actually had to cut off because I would need her and she would come back at me and say, this is too much for me. And that isn't wrong of her, but it was, you know, I had to like really reevaluate and be like, okay, this person's not the one that I can call.
You got to stay in your lane.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. And if it's a trigger for someone, then it's a trigger for, I'm a lot for someone. And for me to like have certain relationships that are there for a reason. And like my mom, who my pseudo mom, that's a terrible word. My son's grandma on his dad's side has really adopted me since I moved here. I haven't talked much about that, but she holds a place for me over the last 15 years that's very, very different. She's very calming. But I wouldn't be able to call her during a panic attack because that's just not, that's not the way. I'm going to cut that out.
It's like not the treatment you need though.
Right.
And that's like the biggest part is like finding those different treatment areas.
Yeah.
Like quote, quote treatment, because like different things work for different people. And of course, like smoking a bowl may help for somebody.
Right.
And like, somebody else, it may make everything like 10 times worse.
Right.
And that's totally finding what works for you
right
in that moment. Because
right,
like taking a Xanax at your next panic attack may not do anything too.
Not doing and much for me now.
Like that's what sucks about yeah panic attacks is like
exactly
sometimes it like the same thing doesn't work for something else. It's right like antibiotics.
Right.
Like if you're building up a resistance to it, it may not exactly get rid of your cold. Like, but it may, you right don't know. And right so finding those things that help each and every time differently
right
is something that's critical and a way to like treat what you're dealing with at that moment
right
too.
And the deep breathing thing, I was just thinking about like when my throat is closing up, like it is very difficult to take a deep breath. And so like, I don't know if this is helping anybody who's listening right now, but you know, some of these things that people say to do really, they really do help. Deep breathing really does help. But when you have like your throat's constricted, what I actually learned this a couple of weeks ago from my trainer, because what he was saying is it's actually the fact that you can't get carbon monoxide out. Mm-hmm. So you need to like push all the air out as hard as you can and then only take a little bit in. Mm-hmm. Because I would get the same way when I was exercising too much or like, you know, like unable to catch yeah my breath, he's like, blow out as much as possible. And I'm telling you, it works because that constriction is because of the carbon monoxide. Mm. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Maybe yep other people did, but instead of going, you know, all the way in, you need to like push out all of the air and then like just take a short breath in. So, I mean, these are all things. One of the things that happened on the phone call, and this is what I love about my therapist as well, is, and I'm sure you're listening, Annabelle, I love you. Now like all of my friends are going to see Annabelle. But anyway, she, like part of her therapy style is that she brings in her own shit and talks about her own shit. And when I was talking to Alex and I'm like, you know, part of this was like, oh my God, how did I get here? Again, I'm 43, like how did I fucking get here? This is not where I thought I would be. Like, I'm smarter than this, you know? And Alex, you know, I mean, I'm not going to get into it, but like gave me some shit of hers. And as much as that made me sad in the moment, though, it actually helped me to know somebody else's shit. And I think that's why this podcast has gotten so much attention, is that you know, every time I get a reaction from any of you guys, especially those of you in Australia, I love you, and on my Twitter messages, that it's just, oh my God, I'm not alone. That's the constant reaction, and knowing that somebody else's shit is out there, but that also I can live a normal life. I can still own a business and have friendships and do all these fun things, but also be real and realistic about the fact that this shit happens. But what were you saying about like specifically what happened tonight was that I saw the guy that is moving out, and he's been, you know, we've had this pseudo relationship for the last year, and the year before, year and a half before that, we were actually in a relationship. And I don't want to be with him, like, at all, but it set me off seeing him come in and then leave to go to this new girlfriend's house.
And it was, like, talking about the aspect of being wanted.
Yeah.
And the fact that it feels like, and sometimes I hate that word, like, it feels like, or it's,
no,
what does it do? Like, but it feels like you don't. You're not wanted, or right. You're not needed. And it's
right.
It's that wanting and needing and those basic human instincts that you're like, yeah, I want to be wanted.
Right.
And I want to be needed by somebody. And
yeah.
Feeling that you're not wanted in any way, platonic or romantic, is like
right.
The shittiest feeling.
Even though I'm like, pushing him out, yeah. I'm saying you have to go.
Yeah.
It's like your mind and your heart, all it doesn't know any different. It's just this, like, I'm fine here by myself when no one's here, and then when he comes in and it's like in my face.
And like, I think the other aspect of it is like the humor in it too is like, I always try, yeah. and this is something that like we talk about in Naomi support groups, like humor is healthy.
Yeah.
And it's something like some people with the worst mental illness that I know, like, have the deepest, darkest senses of humor. And you're like, how can you even say that? And they're like, why would I not,
right.
Man? Like, right. Why would I not talk about that? And,
right.
And like, I'm sorry if that's triggering for you, but like, it is something that like, it's healthy to like joke about it. And it's,
yeah.
It's good to smile and laugh because those, yeah. Endorphins that come from it just are just like ping lights in the brain, and
yeah.
Just you feel that more positivity. And guess what? Life is freaking funny.
Life is really, really fucking funny.
Like
we laugh so hard. I'm not gonna say the thing that she said, but like the driest sense of humor, Alex London is so funny. I don't know why I have to use your first and last name because it's the best name ever. Alex London and Brooke Lacey. Like, come on. It's the greatest. Is that your maiden name?
No.
That's your married name.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so good. My maiden name is Lacey. So when I was married, people were like, why aren't you changing your name? I'm like, would you change your name from Brooke Lacey to anything else? And they're like, no, that's probably true.
Yeah.
Anyway, I wanted to bring this up. This is a little story that, you know, sometimes my story gets a little salacious, but when I was 20, I've told you guys this before about my drug use in the past. When I started using cocaine, I was probably 17 or 18 at the parties in Chicago and then especially into the club scene. And Alex, I did a lot of cocaine, like a lot of cocaine. And it was an interesting situation because there were definitely times where, I mean, it's euphoric and it's like, I mean, it's an incredible feeling. And then you get to the point where you have to keep doing more and keep doing more. And then your heart's racing. And then what happens is you get so tired that it's not the cocaine anymore. It's your body like breaking down and being so tired that you're like, that's where the panic comes in. So I didn't know I had all of these, you know, this panic disorder and anxiety disorder. I just thought I was a cokehead. And then when I stopped doing that and continued having these episodes, I also thought it's just a holdover from all the coke that I'm having. I'm having like, you know, flashbacks or
like, it's fine.
Like, did I just do an 8-ball of coke? I don't know. But it's an interesting thing where your body doesn't know the difference between, you know, a chemical and then just, you know,
its own chemicals.
Its own chemicals. Its own reaction to its own bullshit. But it's like, you know, you sometimes these surges of energy, like when I have a manic episode, that's very different than panic. We like to make the distinction of, you know, the anxiety disorder and panic disorder, but then there's like manic episodes, and those are like being high on a speed, because you can clean the house in an hour, and that's an incredible high that you come down way hard from. So I guess my point is, like, first of all, the dog is crying outside the door, because she's panicked right now. She feels the panic disorder. Oh, Lord. We'll
get her some doggy Xanax.
35 minutes into this. I'll tell you this, though. Obviously, you can hear that, like, we're laughing and things are good. Don't sit in your home. Don't sit and dwell on this. Don't think that you can't reach out. Even if you have to call 7 different friends until you find the one that like makes you feel better, in the moment, don't feel bad about calling someone. Shit, if you need to email me, then do it. You know, like
get it out, get it on paper, get it on expel the energy however you can.
Exactly.
Like the best way to get through it is honestly like through it.
Yeah.
It's just to get out on the other side and just keep thinking about how much better you're going to feel after.
Yep. And that it is going to end. It's going to end.
It's temporary.
That is the good thing about panic disorder. Yeah. Those panic attacks, they are temporary. It will stop. Yeah. It is not a heart attack.
Yeah.
I mean,
if you don't think it is, at least.
Well, yeah. I mean, it feels that way, but... Well, this is the first of many conversations that we're going to have with Alex London. And, you know, I hope that you guys get something out of this. Is there any last words that you have?
Just like say your shit, man.
Yep.
Just say your shit. Yeah.
Gotta do it.
Like, I think getting through it and like reaching out and educating yourself. And
yeah,
like, I think as an advocate and as a recent advocate, I would say just learn and learn how to tell your story is powerful.
Yep.
Like it doesn't even have to be your whole story. It doesn't have to be everything. And you don't have to feel confident doing it either. Right. Like I feel like a lot of people feel like, oh, you know, I could never do that. Like I could never get up on stage and talk about it. Like don't get on stage.
Right. I'm not telling you to go start your own podcast. Like,
talk about it to one of your friends
that
may not have ever known you deal with this.
Yeah.
Or you listen to like podcast. Like
right.
Talk about it to one person, say like, I'm feeling sad today.
Yeah.
Or like I had a really bad panic attack. Like you could even say it in a joke.
Shit. Well, I've told you guys before and I've gotten emails from you when I've said this, but write it out in an email to brooke@mentalillnesslife.com and send it to me. I guarantee you I'm not gonna send it to anyone else. Even if you say at the bottom, I don't need a response, you know, I don't, whatever you want, write it out and send it. I do a lot of stuff where I write things out and put it in the fire. So I just have a little fire pit type thing. And it's so helpful. So you don't even have to say it to anybody, but you're right. Just like learn the symptoms and the signs and.
Yeah. And just reach out and reach out for others too.
Because
that's the powerful point. And like speaking for yourself, but also speaking for them is that powerful point. Like if you're not ready to do it for yourself, do it for somebody else.
Right. It's so true. Well, I love you, Alex.
Love you too.
We're going to be lifelong friends. And I love you to all of my friends that are listening. Mel, you are my constant. And I know that you're listening. You're my biggest fan. And I love your face. And all of your things. And I want you guys to look for the videos that are going to come out on after September 28th, and then a couple of them in October, speaking engagements that I have. I'm going to be emceeing at this really cool thing that Alex put together. The National Alliance for Mental Illness does a walk, and it's a fundraiser. So all of you that don't live in Idaho, just be on the lookout for those videos, because it's going to be really cool to see me in action.
Yeah.
So until then, I hope that you take care of yourselves and each other.